Welcome to the Bike Show here on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Jack Thurston. Yet again, we've reached the end of the season. I know, it's true, it goes so fast. And yes, it's sad. But the Bike Show will be back in a couple of months' time. If this is your first time listening to the show, well, you couldn't have chosen a better moment to drop in, because today's show is basically a look back at some of the very best bits of the last 3 years on air. And if you're a long-time listener, perhaps today's show will conjure up a few memories or remind you of the shows that you might have missed. The good news is that every past edition of the show, and we're closing in on 150 episodes since the show began back in 2004, every edition is available to listen to online at your leisure, either via the iTunes podcast store or on the Bike Show's own website at www.thebikeshow.net. So take the pressure off those pedals, sit up and enjoy an all downhill journey through 3 years of bicycling broadcasting here on Resonance FM, London's unique, award-winning community arts and radio station. We begin the trip on the bicycle polo courts of northeast London.
We usually play on a five-a-side court, usually found like on estates or in communities. So it's a hard court. Play with three people on each team. So there's three on either side, and it's first team to five goals wins.
So what makes a good player?
Somebody that can ride quite well, get out of tight corners, and somebody that's got a bit of balls, really.
It tends to be the vision, like knowing where the ball is or where the ball's going to be or where your players are going to be as well, really. Sort of judging what's going on, really.
Is he going to pass to his partner? No. Takes the long shot. Fails. Hassan picking up the loose ball. Up to the half court. Looks for his partner. She's on his right. She is a lefty. Perfect opportunity for a pass. He doesn't take it. Matt intercepts. Open goal. Breakaway and all. A fantastic recovery by Hassan. Picks up the ball in the corner. Breakaway opportunity again. He takes it. All he needs to do is tap the ball back gently. Yes, and he scores. That's a game.
And Verosio was, the very first cyclotourist, in fact. He was the one to give the rules of cycling. You will eat before feeling hungry, you will drink before feeling thirsty, you will never pedal through your pride, you will put a jacket before feeling cold, and so all the rules, all the very old and very useful rules that you can have when you ride were from Verosio. He was the very first one.
It's about 9:30 at night. I'm sitting inside my tent, listening to the thunder.
But then actually it's really nice. It's very, very nice. Because you feel so much freer than when you take the bus. You rely on the bus, you have to wait for it, etc. And here you can just go on your bike and do whatever you like. It's cheaper than getting an Oyster and take the bus all the time. And you just feel more independent. It's pointless to have a car here because, it's with the traffic and stuff, it doesn't make sense. So I was very scared. I did think that I might, not handle it because of all the cars and stuff. But actually, it's fine. You just get used to it, and then you get more confident. I like the
feel of the wind as it blows so free.
Blows so free.
I feel that this is the way it should always be.
Always be.
The sky so blue above, I think that I'm in love with my 10-speed wheels.
There's two things you gain once you start cycling along a road or down a track or in any way get going. One is that you get speed, and this gives you momentum. And the great thing about wheels is that it preserves your momentum for a long time, much longer than legged animals. So off you go, you've got speed, you've got momentum. The other thing you gain when you're cycling is you gain balance over something that's two-wheeled, which is very, very counterintuitive and odd. And personally think this is probably the biggest factor in this debate, and it doesn't seem to have come up on any of the blogs, which is this, that it's very hard to balance a bike when it's stationary. It's almost impossible. There are some people who can do standing starts and stands, and they're very, very talented people in my view, because I can't do it, and I've tried for ages because it's really cool. But once you get going above about 5 miles an hour, the bike seems, and in fact there is evidence, that it balances itself. And that's partly due to a gyroscopic effect, but mostly what it is due to is the fact that you can steer the bike, and actually what you're doing is steering it so that it's always balanced. That's mostly what goes on. And that is a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And when you stop at a red light, you lose both of those two things. You lose your energy, which you're going to have to regain by putting it in with your legs, but you also lose that beautiful sense of balance.
I like to watch the world as it passes by. The sound around me sing of the earth and sky. This is the way to ride through the countryside on my 10-speed wheels. My 10-speed wheels.
I mean, the Ridgeway itself is a sort of liminal area. There's that feeling that you're on a sort of threshold, that you're not that far away from understanding just a bit more about it. And the bicycle, I think, is a perfectly designed vehicle for that. You're sort of putting yourself into a state of fugue, if you like, where you almost can't take on everything. It's a total immersion device, and that's one of the things that I really love about it. It's not like being in a car where you can lock yourself out from the environment. When you're on a bike, you can feel everything around you, and you can see everything. You can even feel your passage through the air. You can feel what it feels like to move against the actual what feels like very still air. And if we were to go 14 miles an hour on our bike, it would be roaring in our ears. That's the power of the bicycle. It puts you into the world in a way that no other kind of means of transport really does.
The sky's so blue above, I think that I'm in love with my 10-speed wheel.
OpenStreetMap was started in 2004 by Steve Coast, following the principles of Wikipedia, which is just anybody can contribute and edit, and we can all cooperate to make a map.
How I love my rolling sailor when he's on the rolling sea.
When he's on a rolling, rolling, when he's on a rolling sea.
We've arrived onto Holy Island, and as we rode into the very calm and quiet village on the far side of the island, having crossed the causeway, the rain that had been slightly unpleasant for the second part of our journey this afternoon just ceased. Suddenly it was gone and all is very still. It's a really tranquil spot. The sky is brightening up by the minute. And there are a few seagulls overhead, lots of bird life you can maybe hear a little bit. And we have a stunning view of a little harbour with a few sailing boats, fishing boats in, and what looks like the ruined abbey in front of us on the side of the village. And behind us, the castle up on a very castle-like rock. This is one of the occasions where radio is perhaps not the best medium, but it is a really tranquil spot, and it's nice that it stopped raining.
We're looking out over the bay, a very small bay. There's an old cutter sitting floating there. It's calm as a mill pond. A little rowing boat's just come in from a fishing boat offshore, and sand dunes really as far as the eye can see.
The first time you went on your bike, yeah, If you fell off, that's practice, and you just have to make practice make perfect.
The first time you got on your bike, you have stabilised.
Yeah. Who's the coolest cyclist in school, do you reckon?
Me.
Seamus.
Yeah, what's cool about Seamus?
Seamus does jumps.
I'm second.
When he does jumps, he just goes woof, and he does a whip.
Yeah, when he does jumps,
he's fearless, isn't he?
When he does his jumps, he said, "Oh, I can't do that," and then he just went down it, and then he done it.
I know. The first time I went on the ramp, I fell straight off it.
Then
you want to be BMX.
I was cycling mechanic from Jamaica. I got my bachelor's in Jamaica. I came here in 1954. My first job was with Claude Butler. Then I lived from Claude Butler to Dayton Cycle in Park Royal Roadhouse then. Spent 10 years with them. Then I moved from Park Royal to Pinch. I worked with Hodge Cycle Company for 25 years. So, really closed down in 1986. And from 1986, I'm here.
Your speciality is wheels, right?
All my wheels are special. I do wheels for Tour de France, Tour de Britain, Tour de Italy. Everybody knows Sam. Sam the wheels. Sam is the greatest.
We had a guy down in Los Angeles that had a catalogue, and he had a big thing going. He could sell Ron Cooper frames until they were coming out of his ears. He came over to me at Honor Oak Park, and we went out to we were doing 26 a month, and I was working 8 days a week. We went out to dinner that night, and he said, "I'm going to make your day, Ron." And I said, "Oh yeah." He said, "I'm going to double my order." Fell into the soup. And I said, "No, this isn't. That won't work. We can't do that." He said, "Well, what do you mean?" And I said, "Well, it's physically impossible. You can't do that." And he said, "Well, I advertised the fact that you build all the frames, but I didn't think you did."
What brings you here to Ripley today?
I seem to accumulate a lot of mountain bike frames and things, and I seem like a magnet to all the stuff. So I've managed to come here and sell.
Ripley is a way of clearing out unwanted stuff, is it?
Yeah, so my wife tells me, yes. She's very keen on me getting rid of stuff, of course. A typical male problem of collecting junk. Well, I see, because she perceives it as junk anyway.
You seem to be aware of the phenomenon of collecting junk. Why do you think it happens?
Peculiar male thing, isn't it? I think it starts off with saving money, doesn't it? Trying to save money by collecting junk. And then become prisoner of it. It's odd, really.
And we were just having a slightly silly jam in my house one evening, and I started playing on my bike, just making small sounds, playing spokes, getting bits of rhythms and kind of metallic resonance, and Zeke sung along with it. And
what did you think of that when he started doing that, Zeke?
Well, I wasn't that surprised, because he tends to play on anything he can find, really, so in fact I wasn't surprised at all, not even a little bit, so I just sort of went along with it, really, and just tried to sing along with it. And then I remember the first time we played the bike, Dave actually rode the bike to the venue. This was not in this band, in another band, turned it upside down and played it and then rode home, so I thought that was quite good.
Breathe in and relax. Breathe out and tense up. Pull your head off. Roll it down your arm. Pull your dog's head off. Roll it down its tail.
We've got this fantastic system. A kind of alternative system to the roads. You look at a road map and you think of how the motorways are a sort of skeleton on which the country's infrastructure hangs. But you look at a canal map of the country and there's this completely different shape to that skeleton, with Birmingham at the centre and London down at one hub, and so many of the towpaths can be cycled. You know, there's some really amazing stuff on the canal network some fabulous aqueducts on the Bath to Bradford stretch of the Kennet-Navan Canal down in the southwest. Two heartbreakingly beautiful aqueducts in this wonderful, wonderful scenery. That's one of the rides in the book. The great sequence of locks, 17 locks in a straight line at Devizes at Cane Hill. An incredible sight, you know, this canal going uphill.
Yo. Yo. It's Abdominal. Einstein on the beat. Push a pedal. Put my foot to the pedal, slipping in a basket. No helmet, so maybe I'll end up in a casket. Prematurely, yo, knock on oak abdominal. Rocket on spokes, resting a rubber by Continental on a vintage frame from Yeti made of metal mid-80s. Factory pink with a white trim. Not following, I know cycling, my man. Legs like Tyson's, 31 years old, still don't have my driver's license for real. So fuck an automobile and big ups to all those people pushing those two wheels. Before I had this mic career, I was on the streets hustling as a bike courier. Now I'm catching transatlantic.
I know quite a few bike messengers who started pedicabbing and then quit being couriers because it's... in some ways, it's harder hours because you lose a lot of your nights and weekends, but it's fewer hours and it's much better money. I have a friend back home, and I've known people in other cities who work as a bike messenger during the day and then spend their Friday, Saturday nights working pedicab. And back when I used to run a company, I would sometimes just go down to the bar and recruit people. Say, you know, who wants to go out and make $200 tonight? there's some amount of crossover, but it's sort of like food delivery. Like people cross back and forth. Generally, people, once they find pedicabbing, don't go and switch to messenger work, but there's a lot of crossover from messenger work to pedicabbing.
It seems a lot more sociable than other forms of working on the bicycle, delivering things.
Oh, for sure. And that's a lot of couriers I know, when I say, hey, do you want to try doing this? They say, oh, I'm a courier because I don't want to talk to people.
I'm very pleased to be back in the mother country with my English brethren.
And how was the trip?
It was fantastic. My legs are like horses' legs, you know, they're bristling and so muscly. I wish you could see it. Listeners, I wish you could see my legs. Well, there's photos on the internet. Yeah, we got a website so you can see my legs with backdrops of China, Yunnan. We were cycling a lot in China and also in Vietnam and Southeast Asia, Thailand, Laos, through various jungles and swamps. This next song is a song I wrote about cycling a bicycle, and it's called Little Bicycle, and it goes like this.
Os cats come nelly.
Cycle on my little bike across the hills along the dike. No matter where I go, my heart is thumping.
So where have you come from this evening?
From Dartmouth. I've cycled in from Dartmouth.
How far is that?
15 miles.
It's a jolly long way, very hilly.
And what was that like tonight? It was a rainy night tonight.
Luckily, the rain stopped earlier today, but I did cycle through a flood and up to my ankles in water in the flood. But it's just great. Even so, it's just great to be out in the countryside, cycling along. I saw a shooting star, and it just makes it a great evening.
Passed by the passengers who see me, send me big old smiles. Everyone on the streets wish they're on a cycle.
I think because it's just such a neat design. I mean, just the basic two wheels and a frame, handlebars and a saddle. It's just so beautifully neat and understated.
I love bikes as machines. If you're interested in design as I am, the bicycle is almost, you know, the perfect machine. As somebody once said, it's the only piece of technology with no downside.
Where I was living at that time in Staffordshire, it wasn't a natural thing. You didn't see people on their bikes. None of my friends rode bikes. It just wasn't talked about. You know, it just wasn't a spoken about method of transport. So it just never even crossed my mind to get one. Everything revolved around the car or walking.
And then coming to London, things changed.
Yeah, absolutely. I started off getting the tube. That was too expensive. Got the bus. Got fed up of waiting for an hour, thought, hang on, I can walk quicker than this. So I started walking from Columbia Road, where I lived, into Oxford Circus. And then I'd suddenly, you know, started to see all these cyclists whizzing past and thought, what the hell am I doing walking? It's taking me an hour. I'm going to get a bike.
I've never actually, not since I was a kid, have I ever ridden in at night before. But no, it's something really surreal about it. When it's pitch black and all you can see are the stars and the moon, and all you can, what's the interesting thing is all you can see for a long, long way down the road are all these flickering red lights in the distance. And it's so quiet and it's pitch black, and you've only got your like headlights, if you like, to, you know, keep the route illuminated. So it's, yeah, it's very, very different and it's good fun. I'm really enjoying it.
I would like to say that for me, I can't imagine it's going to get any better than this. You know, my son's on the ride, my son-in-law's on the ride, and Chuck Berry is playing at the Hackney Empire. When I was young, I always hoped that Chuck Berry would play at my 30th birthday party. But then I realised that was not going to happen. But last night, Chuck Berry was playing, and 500 idiots rode past the front of the building, didn't go in. But Chuck Berry is the patron saint of foolish expeditions, you know, foolish excursions, frivolous, foolish excursions. You know, the night was young and the moon was old.
You always look at pictures of China. In the old days, there were loads of bikes. Now it's gone capitalist, there's more cars. It's kind of totemic of socialist societies because they didn't have the wealth to support a car culture. The fact that they had to resort to bikes is symbolic of the failure of their economic progress. However, now we're getting richer. You have £1,000 bikes made out of titanium or whatever, and it's becoming a sort of a symbol of your wealth to have these expensive, over-engineered bikes. Riding on my
My daughter was killed in the city in 2000. She was cycling to work along London Wall. She was a very good and experienced cyclist, and there was nothing wrong with what she was doing on the road, as the CCTV images showed. But then a concrete mixer lorry turned left and mowed her down, and she was killed instantly. And I was just appalled at the way I was then treated by the criminal justice system. I had a coroner who couldn't even be bothered to be polite, a real farce of a trial. And I just thought, I'm not willing to let my daughter be treated like a piece of casually discarded industrial waste along the road to economic progress.
I've spent 8 years chairing the fire brigade in London, and, you know, a very important role I felt, and I took it very seriously. And there are about 50 fire deaths a year in London that we want to avoid. When I shifted over to look at the transport brief, I think what shocked me was the massive numbers of deaths and injuries we have on our roads in London. And some are other because they're deemed accidents or private events or personal tragedies, or they're happening between private vehicles sometimes. They're not seen as a matter so much of public policy and public concern. And in central London, where road space is in great competition, I think we, the Labour and the other members of the Assembly, have always said, you've got to say who are the important people. And from my point of view, it's pedestrians, it's cyclists, it's people using public transport. This, you know, these are the environmental imperatives in central London. I think I'm a bit worried that Corvia Ranger, the mayor's advisor, and the mayor seem to be wanting to have it always and say, you know, drivers and road and cyclists should have equal share of the road space. It's not going to work like that in London. The most efficient thing for London, the best thing for our environment, the best thing for our public safety is that pedestrians and cyclists should come first. And I think that's a line that, you know, the mayor has really got to clarify in his own mind where he sits on that one.
Well, that was Val Shawcross, who is the
London Assembly member for Lambeth and Southwark.
A bit less charming is the bike lane along Nine Elms, which is not far from here, about 2 or 3 miles to our west. And that one, it goes past Battersea Dogs and Cats Home. There's one stretch of about 50 metres where it's blocked 5 times by posts actually in the middle of the bike lane with various signs on. And 2 of the signs are for the bike lane, telling you that it's a bike lane, and they block the bike lane, so you can't use it.
Although it looks very, very heavy, the bike is actually going at a reasonable speed. Well, all I can say is it's fantastique. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, it's solid, but it's not...
It looks as though it's really, really heavy and hefty.
It's not as heavy as it looks, is it?
But, no, it's going at quite a decent rate.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
It's a great way of exploring the city.
What are the toughest decisions that you've had to make to promote cycling in Copenhagen?
The toughest decision is when you have to reduce parking places to make a bicycle lane. I usually describe it sort of as the cultural value battle of the cities.
And Jason, my outdoor swimming and Lido guide for the day, has expressed already to me privately his reservations about the murky waters of the Serpentine, because this is a natural... The West is not, I don't think it's an, is it a natural lake or is it a man-made lake anyway? It's natural waters coming down from one of the old lost rivers of London, essentially, then dammed up here and then eventually working their way down to the Thames. But it is a lake and it has swimming in it, but you're not too sure about it.
Expressing reservations is putting it mildly. I've been here once before. That was late September time. And I thought, yeah, I can handle this, no problem. I went in with my goggles, couldn't see a thing. Got kind of midway in the Serpentine Lido, panicked, and that was the end of my Serpentine experience. It's just the concept of not being clear and dirty and muddy and possible things swimming beneath your toes that puts me off.
Right, well, we're being joined by a gaggle of Canada geese.
Yeah, but that is my problem. You see, I don't want to swim with geese. I want to swim with other humans who actually enjoy the outdoor experience. I'm kind of petrified.
The geese are enjoying the outdoor experience.
Yeah, but I've got this kind of vision of me getting in the middle again, panicking, and then these geese flocking on top of me and perhaps drowning me. This does seem a bit too natural for my liking.
I think everything was becoming slightly more rounded and optimistic. The angular thing was becoming much more rounded and approachable. A sense of optimism and a sense of joy and the style of the time. And so it was ahead and it spoke to people who wanted to go forward with that optimism.
Coming out of the bleak period of the 1950s when we'd had, you know, sweet rationing, which is a bad thing for a child to grow up with, and things were very dull, you know, diet had been dull, and life in general was rather dull in the 50s. And then the 60s, of course, everything started taking off, as is well known, and there was the famous phrase about the white-hot technological revolution that Harold Wilson came out with, and there were all these new things. You know, there was a sort of a belief that everything was going to get better in every way. Hovercrafts, jet engines, all sorts of things were coming through. And the Molten Bicycle came through at the same sort of time.
In this country, we are currently are not interested in, as we used to be, in engineering innovation. We're simply fashion-driven and bottom-line-driven.
And do you think that's a problem?
I personally do. I think that it's a natural thing for mankind to make things and create things which are useful and needed. And I believe it's all still in the breed, if you like, in the psyche of England. But I just like to bring it on and encourage it.
And where is it happening in the world? Who are the Alex Moltons of the 21st century?
I think they're about. I'm sure they're about somewhere. I don't know where. I'm sure they are. Maybe the West Coast of America. I don't know. I'm sure they are.
So once you've got your kind of shaped piece of cured leather, it has to be fastened onto the back plate, and that is done with rivets. And this is the sound of a riveting machine.
You know, when I was growing up in cycling, I kept the company of other cyclists who, how we define them, a certain amount of bravado. It was all to do with, and certainly from the racing point of view, how much courage you had.
The ability to make people hurt. The ability to be able to turn on people to actually look at you and say, that guy's, he's good, that good, and that sort of like being recognised is a big thing with it.
It was all to do with courage and bottle and effort. And I like to think that whatever it is I do, I apply myself in the same way.
I think for anyone crossing Siberia, I mean, that's got to be a daunting prospect.
Yeah, it was. It was very daunting. So I'd been on the road for 3 years by now. So in one sense, I was completely accustomed to the life, and it had become my life. So I was pretty blasé about all the issues of routes and massive distances and visas and all that kind of stuff. But it was still a big, big distance, and physically probably the toughest thing I've ever done. Temperatures were down to minus 40. Oh, it was just brutal. It was freezing cold, exhausting, and truly miserable. But I'm very, very glad I did it.
How did your bike stand up to 40 degrees below zero?
I was quite worried about...
Well, they're not made for that kind of temperature, are they?
I don't think it would be a big market for it, no. The biggest difficulty really was with when I had punctures. Trying to fiddle around fixing a puncture at minus 40 is a pretty miserable experience. The tyre would be frozen on to the rim, everything would be frozen, so I'd have to light my cooking stove and then hold the wheel, the rim into the flame, but obviously not too much because that would be a disaster. Just to thaw it enough so I could try and prise off the tyre. And then once you got the tyre off, your hands are freezing, shaking them around, and also just by not cycling anymore, my whole body temperature would be dropping dangerously low. So you have to stop for intervals just to run around, doing a chicken dance, something like that, to try and warm up again. You know, you have to then pump up the inner tube a little bit to make it take shape, but that would be frozen, so I have to put things down my pants. That was my general source of warmth, so I have to put everything down my trousers just to thaw them out a bit. The plastic on the pump would break, you have to super glue it back together, and it was just an absolute nightmare. It's one of the worst puncture experiences I've ever had, I think.
You've proved to be among the best at this Tour de France.
You reckon? We'll see, eh? There's a long way to go. You know, let's not get too excited, you know, that's one day. Tomorrow's another day. Tomorrow could be last in the Tour de France, you know. Who knows?
But you're satisfied, Brad, no?
Yeah. What do you think?
Can't judge apple by looking at a tree. You can't judge honey by looking at the bee. Daughter by looking at the mother. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. Oh, can't you see? Oh, you misjudged me. I look like a farmer, but I'm a lover. Can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
And here are the showers themselves. Very simple affairs with a chain that you pull and the water just comes out. One temperature, the stools are pretty stained and pretty rough and ready, but you can feel the history all around. Now the water's now flowing. And just think of the tired bodies that have bathed themselves under these waters. You can see a little bit of steam rising off now. And just a short ration of water, as if it's all being conserved. Really marvellous, absolutely marvellous. I hope this place stays as it is now for as long as the Paris-Roubaix race is run, because if they change this, then something will be lost. of this great race.
You have absurdity all over in cycling. You have absurdity from the companies and the way they market sometimes. You have absurdity in the consumers and the way they receive that marketing and kind of lap it up. You have absurdity in the supposedly edgier areas of cycling or grassroots of cycling. There's a lot of absurdity, but underneath it all, I really think that people are catching on to cycling as a way of life in a way that's maybe new. I think you've seen tons of cycling trends in the past, but the difference now is I do think people are starting to appreciate that you can integrate a bicycle into your life. You can use it in addition to using it as a fitness tool and a racing tool and a fashion tool. It's a great way to get around. It's a great way to get around in the city.
That was Eben Weiss, a.k.a. Bike Snob New York City, rounding off 3 years of the bike show compressed into just half an hour. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you do enjoy the show, well, there's something I'd like you to do. And no, I'm not going to ask you to give Resonance FM your money. Not right now, though if you want to, we'd love it. No, I want you to do something else. Something that won't cost you a penny. I want you to do something, whatever you can, to spread the word about the show, to encourage other people who might not have heard of the show but might enjoy it to listen in. It could be as simple as going onto iTunes and writing a little review of the show. You could mention what you liked about it. You could mention the show on Twitter, or if you have a blog, on your blog. You could burn a CD with your favourite episode and send it in the post to your grandma. You could suggest that your local community or college radio station syndicate the show for listeners where you live. Whatever you think you can do to help. You see, at Resonance FM, a marketing department is as foreign a concept as a dope-free Tour de France champion. Resonance FM doesn't have any departments at all, actually. It just has three staff who manage to keep the station on air, plus a whole lot of volunteers, engineers, program makers and contributors. In other words, people who give their time to make the kind of radio that you won't hear anywhere else. So how do people find out about Resonance FM and the bike show if there's no advertising or promotion? Well, if they're in central London, they might come across it on the FM dial, but mostly it's word of mouth. And that means it's up to you, dear listeners. So go on, tell someone about the bike show today. I'll love you forever. And that's it for this season. I'll be back in the saddle when the suit bind is in bud. Until then, enjoy the ride. And thanks for listening. Goodbye.